This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Back here on Follow the Money, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel in for the guys live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. A couple score updates for you on the Olympic ice. The U.S. men up 4-1 as we sit in the second intermission currently against Latvia. Had a three-goal second period after what could have been a three-goal first period. It had not a couple goals been disallowed. But Brock Nelson with two of them. He has looked fantastic to this point. Also, Germany up 3-1 currently over Denmark. Tim Stutzel with a pair in the second period. They, too, in the second intermission. Still to come this hour on Follow the Money, we're going to have Christopher Powers join us of Golf Digest, talk through some of the early returns and betting angles we have out there at Pebble Beach. MLB season previews will continue, diving into the Chicago White Sox today, see if they can avoid losing more than 100 games maybe this year, maybe not. Also, do you concur? Then in hour three, Steve West, soccer handicapper, breaking down some of the bets to be made this weekend. We do start, however, in American football, JVT, because
the season's over.
We had a Super Bowl parade yesterday, and unfortunately, I tried to pull some sound for the show, and we can't use any of it because of not just all of the expletives, but the T-shirts that were made that have Sam Darnold flipping the bird on everything.
Do you know how hard I tried to find that shirt? I'm a big, I like those types of shirts.
Yes, you do.
I don't think you and I were together as a show at that point. But
the Jalen Brunson one you have?
I have the Jalen Brunson one, yes. No, but I was referring to there was a year, last year, where when Minnesota won a series, the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards had the great line of bring ass down to Minnesota. And so I ordered the shirt. It took months, not months, maybe like a month. By the time I got it, they had been eliminated. So I wore it on the air the next day after they were eliminated. So there was no ass brought. But I will say that I am big on those. I tried to find it, but I'm getting scared because there's a lot of spots that like will pop up. I don't know if I'm spending my money. My credit card information has been stolen far too often, and I think it's because I'll just click on the first link and buy something a lot of the times if it's really cool, and I really want one of those shirts. So if you can find me a link, please send it to me of Sam Darnold flipping a bird while drinking a beer or, you know, smoking a spliff, because that's the other one that I really like. There's a GIF out there that's made of AI of him just smoking a joint.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Flying off into the sky. So I'll take that too. But any links, appreciate it, please. At me, JVT.
Yeah, you do have, like, you have some unique shirts like that. You also do well with the alternate minor league baseball hats.
That's a fun one.
How many of those would you say you have?
Like 10? I got a big head, though. It's a disappointing thing.
It's harder to buy.
Yeah, well, it's harder to buy. And it just, you know, sometimes it depends on the way the hat's cut. Doesn't really look great. Size 8. You know.
What's your favorite one?
The Chonklas. I think the San Antonio. The Flying Chonklas. No, it's I'll have to look it up for you, but I got a couple of those.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, San Antonio, thank you. No.
Yeah, you got some cool ones.
The one with the bird with the sign that says Suerte for luck is the Norfolk Riptides, which Jensen Ewis used to play for.
Oh, no way.
Yes. So that was a good one, too. That's like an alternate logo for them. So.
That's a great tease as well. I believe we'll have Jensen on the program tomorrow.
Yes. We'll pitch it and catch him.
Talking through some baseball. So that'll be good. We'll keep this rolling, though, on the Sam Darnold theme real quickly, because while we, again, can't play the sound for you right now because of the images that we'll have on the screen, a lot of the quotes coming out from him on the podium at the parade yesterday talking about the team's belief in him. He said, quote, "A lot of people didn't believe in me, but it didn't matter because the ones that are here, the ones that are close, believed in me, including you all. I appreciate you all so much." That short list also includes, and he listed off the GM, Coach McDonald, all of that stuff, but just the belief that they had in him to get to this point. And I think, like, his story is so great that he's been able to put the, what are you making that face for?
I've been listening this whole time.
John Brown just
send me a link that I was clicking on, and
you're trying to buy the shirt. All right, got it. You can do that in the commercial break. It is possible.
It is. I'm sorry.
It's interesting how different he clearly feels in Seattle and what this team has meant to him in signing this contract. He even said at one point recently that, like, this is the first time in his career he actually felt comfortable to buy a house. He hasn't had coach turnover. He feels secure, locked in a contract. You win a Super Bowl. His first 5 years in the league had a new head coach every year, multiple coordinators. It was just an uphill battle. And now he's in a stable situation with a good culture.
I mean, I think my only question would be, now that Clint Kubiak is here in Sin City, what does it look like? What does the offense generally look like? I think the sample size is growing on the back end of Sam Darnold's career here that we expect he is going to be an above average quarterback. I guess it will be, I think we should be a little fair. So the NFC Championship game was great, but the last game was very similar to the last, what would you say, 9 or 10 games of the regular season. He was a 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, but the completion percentage plummeted. The average of the target really went down as well from that first game they played the Los Angeles Rams. Not to take away from Darnold's season so far, but you do wonder, I mean, if you actually cut his season in half, there is a very clear drop-off in the second portion of the season.
Listen, you're going to get Ernest Jones to start screaming at you, and I can't have that.
You play that?
I don't think we can play it.
It's good.
We can't play it either.
Love a good F-bomb, you know
what I mean? But he said, like, not only is our defense the best, but put some respect on Sam Darnold's name.
Yeah.
And he will not have bleep you if you don't. So
sorry, I got scared. I thought we gave up a goal here. We did not.
Okay, you're still in cover territory where things sit right now. I don't know. I was just really happy for him. And honestly, because of the contract that he's on, the Seahawks are in a pretty good position. And I don't think when you look at Sam Darnold, you don't expect him to be Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. I know he was a very highly touted draft pick when the Jets got him, but that's not what you expect or need Sam Darnold to be. With that team and the talent that you have around him and the defense that you have, you just need him to not mess it up. Right? To be able to manage the game efficiently. And he did that in the playoffs. And for all of the talk about Sam Darnold seeing ghosts, he didn't have a single turnover in the postseason. That's huge.
No, I mean, that is very big. You know, when you go back to the stretch that I'm talking about here, the 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio thing's not great, but you're only talking about, if memory serves, 11 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. So it's not like he was throwing the bombs all over the place and getting picked off and turning it over. So look, I think they should be the favorites. I think there's enough of this core remaining, and we'll see what happens with the pieces that need to be re-signed. But I do think that there is legitimate questions as to, okay, how dominant will this team be as we get into next year in comparison with how the market is going to price them? And if they lose these pieces, should they be priced where they're at? It's going to be very interesting to see what that looks like. I mean, we see it all the time. I mean, teams look dominant in these runs, and we don't know what's going to happen. Sure. And looks like they're going to be there forever, and it's just flash in the pan, and they're gone back to the middle of the pack. So
that
we'll see.
Said, they do have a lot of money to play with.
They do.
And will their GM Schneider re-sign Kenneth Walker? Said Kenneth Walker's trying to negotiate him drunk at the parade.
What do you think that conversation went like?
That is not a good way to try to be funny. That's all I'm going to say.
It's weird, considering technically the guy doesn't have a job.
Not going to be great. Seattle is, though, to your point, the favorites, plus 950, tied with the Rams. Buffalo Bills, 11-1. New England Patriots, 13-1, as are the Baltimore Ravens. The Eagles, Chiefs, Packers, and Lions all sitting at 14-1. Mm-hmm. Some notable futures line movement that we have seen early, and I brought this up with you on Money Moves the other day. The Giants have actually been, at least on DraftKings, the most bet Super Bowl team so far. Long shot, they've moved down from 90-1 to 70-1 with the new head coach, Jackson Dart. What is the ceiling for this team? Everybody's trying to figure out if they can be the next New England Patriots, turning it around. So that one, the Bears, I thought this was interesting. Despite being the most bet team to win the NFC, their odds actually got longer for the Super Bowl from 22-1 to 25-1. The Bengals also lengthening from 22-1 to 25-1. From a conference standpoint, the Bengals, though, went down from 14-1 to 12-1. The Giants number cut down from 40-1 to 30-1. The Eagles plus 700, plus 650. And the Jags from 10-1 out to 11-1, the most bet exact matchup for the Super Bowl. 160-1. Jags and Bears. We got another goal.
We got another goal,
PPG.
Brother. Let's go. Power play goal. Hey, I think, did Kachuk
score? One of the Kachuk brothers?
No, never mind. It's Matthews.
Austin Matthews.
There we go. Okay. We'll take it.
Unfortunately, he didn't do anything good for your future, but he did.
Hey, I was going to say, if we get this, we get the money back and a little bit more. So you know what? Bring it on down. Let's go.
There you go. 5-1 advantage right now for Team USA, where things sit there. But how much do you think that Jags-Bears exacta was bet because of the colors of the logo? Because that's been such a big thing in recent years of, like, the colors of the Super Bowl
logo. It didn't hit this year, did it?
I don't remember. I didn't look into that this year. I don't remember what the colors
were. I don't even remember what the Super Bowl logo looks like. I have no idea.
But orange and, like, blue-teal are the two colors of the logo that I saw going around.
Yeah. No, not really. There's a lot of colors in there. Whatever.
Okay. Do you have any, like, strong feelings, at least early going into next year, of, like, teams that you think can steadily improve or be a regression candidate?
It's absolutely Atlanta. Atlanta is, if we're talking about investing your money this far out and getting something back for it, I mean, do you want to invest at 9-1 here in February and have to wait a year for this to happen? Because when's the Super Bowl happening next year?
So this I actually think is kind of fun because how much we've been talking about the schedule expanding, there's going to be 18 games, and wouldn't it be so great if the day after Super Bowl you had the day off? This coming year, it is the President's Day weekend, which is kind of fun. So you get the Super Bowl day off on that Monday. The Super Bowl is also on Valentine's Day, which I think is an interesting conversation for all the men and women out there.
Not really. Valentine's Day is a corporatized holiday that means absolutely nothing. So I would say you're good. If I need a holiday to express love to somebody important in my life, I feel like your relationship's a little on the rocks. Are you giving us some insight as to what's going on at the Bonatoni
Every household? Day should be Valentine's Day.
Correct.
No, I, what? No. However, I do think that there are a handful of people out there in the world that do not care about football whatsoever, and that day is important.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that'll be like, there are a lot of people who probably think that Valentine's Day is somewhat important and should be treated as such. I am not one of those people.
I am subjecting my husband, though, to go to Backstreet Boys this weekend, which is technically Valentine's Day.
But was that
Day
specifically
weekend.
For Valentine's Day, or was it just, no. Hey, they're playing and it happened to be on Valentine's Day?
We're going with two other friends that are celebrating their birthday. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's on Valentine's Day weekend. So
that's why you guys couldn't hang
but
out.
But you can
me.
Use the excuse, right? Like, oh, but you'd be so lonely.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, kill me. But
this went well. This really died out a little bit here.
I figured you were going to have more to contribute to
you
this.
You can't constantly rely on me for strong jumping off points. I mean, I know it's the theme of our show, but at some point, you got to give me something.
Well, when we come back, hopefully you have some more strong jumping off points for the Chicago White Sox. I know you've been looking really deep into this. There are a handful of other Major League Baseball headlines, though, that we need to hit on when we come back here on Follow the Money. Pitchers and catchers reporting last few days. We'll get into a handful of items next here on Follow the Money. I just thought you'd have more love in the air, JVT. That's all it is.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Back here on Follow the Money, still 5-1 with Team USA in the lead, about 13 minutes to go over Latvia, where things sit right now. A couple minutes into the third, Austin Matthews with the power play goal. Jack Eichel, by the way, primary assists on both of the power play goals for the U.S. as of right now. We'll see if they can hold on to this thing, though. You laid the 2.5. Team USA, that is, was laying 3.5 in the pre-flop. They were a massive, massive favorite in this game. So the fact that it was tied at 1 after the first period was an upset in itself. I told you, I think in the first period for Team USA, laying half a goal was like minus 250, I want to say, maybe higher.
And that got there, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. It was a tie game after one.
I apologize. You're right. You know, it's why I keep going back to those goals that were taken off in that first period, thinking that that was the case. So, look, they've obviously, I mean, they've been seeing it in circles around them. I'm going to try to use a hockey term that I think is going to be used correctly here within this context. It feels like the ice is tilted.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Well played.
It feels like the ice is tilted this way, whatever, toward Latvia. They can't get out of their own end. And this has been a pretty impressive performance from Team USA. And they continue to get opportunities to do it. So hopefully we can get one more to give me a little bit of cushion here. And then, I mean, if you're Latvia, do you even pull your goaltender? Or do you not pull him strategically? You've watched more hockey. In big deficits like this, would you actually, like, does it matter? Would you pull your goaltender?
I think you still would. Yeah, you still fight for it at the end.
When do you do it?
As soon as possible.
Right,
do
that's
it
what I'm
now.
Saying. It's just no. You're down 6-1 right now.
5-1.
5-1. Excuse me. What do you do? I mean, with 2 minutes, you're like, all right, boys, here we go. Let's pull the goaltender. Let's get our man advantage, and we see if we can make up 5 goals here in the next 2 minutes. Or do you pull it earlier?
It is curious to see if another goal is scored, because the total is in the balance here, 6.5 on the pre-flop number here. So that whatever, if another goal is scored, is going to be impactful for somebody out there right now. The goal scorers for anybody who bet any of those anytime goals, Austin Matthews, Brock Nelson had two, so potentially in hat trick territory, which was obviously a betting option that you could get on the board as well for specific players, or will somebody score a hat trick in the first round, that kind of thing. Tage Thompson and Brady Tkachuk also those goal scorers in Germany. They are up 3-1 right now with about 13 minutes to go in that game as well. Tim Stutzel with two goals in the second period. Leon Draisaitl with the first for Germany to get things going there. Let's get into a little Major League Baseball here, because we're each day going to go through team after team. We're kind of going from worst to first. So far, it hasn't been the greatest breakdown. Talking Washington Nationals yesterday and Chicago White Sox today. Before we get to that, though, yeah, I did want to hit on some of the news throughout Major League Baseball that we didn't get a chance to get into the last couple days, and I am just curious some of your opinion on it. The Tigers is one of those teams that's going full circle, bringing Justin Verlander back, 1 year, $13 million deal. I know he's no longer the three-time Cy Young guy at, 42 years old, but still pretty awesome and in a rotation with Tarek Skubal. Framber Valdez is there now, Jack Flaherty, Casey Mize, not too shabby of a group.
No, I mean, that's, to me, is the big headliner here is that, look, you don't need to ask Justin Verlander to be the guy. This is a stacked rotation. Framber Valdez getting the three-year deal, $115 million. It's a team that's very much going for it, and I don't know if I like the offense a ton, as we saw from last year, but this is a team that it doesn't really matter. You give them 3-4 runs, and you're going to be able to get this thing done for the most part. So you have to. You have to like what the Tigers have done, and this should be a team that, once again, is going to be able to make a very strong run, should they stay healthy, which is always the big question.
Some other news today, the Phillies releasing Nick Castellanos after failing to find a trade partner there. Why you laugh?
Did you see this story? So I'm going to pull this up right now. So Castellanos, as you talked about, getting released, he put out a statement about so he took a couple of pictures of a written statement that he had out there. And I guess one of the stories, and he went through a lot of issues and things like that, but one of them was about buying, once he got subbed out on a defensive substitution, going and buying beer and sitting in the clubhouse and whatnot. So it was very odd. And I have to read the whole thing, including, cracked open the Presidente beer and carried the green bottle into the Phillies dugout in the middle of a game. So,
like, where his head's at.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do we come into the studio and be like, when can we open a beer?
And that's essentially maybe the beginning of the end with his time in Philadelphia as it's being slugged. So maybe some issues there. But either way, Castellanos, like you mentioned, out.
A handful of notable injuries as well around the league. Braves placing Spencer Schwellenbach on 60-day IL with elbow inflammation. Francisco Lindor for the Mets evaluated for a stress reaction of the hammock bone. Anthony Santander missing 5 to 7 weeks with shoulder surgery. Shane Bieber having his spring ramp up delayed as well due to arm fatigue. Like, lots of guys, it feels like, injured.
Yes, indeed. But, I mean, look, this is the portion of the season where you're going to get all of this. We'll see by the time we get to the end of the – the reason why we're starting this is because – even doing these once a day, at least talking about some of these baseball teams that we're going to talk about Chicago here, that leads us up to the week of opening week. So we still have plenty of time.
Okay, so let's get into the White Sox. Can they, I teased it kind of jokingly, but I'm not really lying. Can they avoid 100 losses for the first time in a few years now?
Wait, did I black out? We didn't play our thing, did we?
Oh, play ball!
There we go. Thank you.
That is beautiful. Win total for the Chicago White Sox, 66.5. To win 60 games is a big number if you wanted to lay it. Minus 450. To have the worst record in baseball, plus 650. They are 1,000-1 to have the best record in baseball. Big picture, though, just general thoughts on Chicago for you.
I think that they're actually a candidate to go over the win total. They've done a pretty good job. They're one of the bigger spenders in the offseason, going out and getting some really big pieces. I think one of the big ones, literally and figuratively maybe, Munetaka Murakami, who comes in. There's a question as to why they were able to get him, and it's somewhat insulting because the projection for Murakami was that he was going to get a nine-figure deal, but he ends up signing for $34 million with the Chicago White Sox. So does that mean that there's something there? Does that mean that maybe some of these teams cooled on him for whatever reason? Is always something to ask. So he goes to the White Sox, and if he pans out, then that's a really good addition for a team that went out there. And it seems like the theme of what they did was adding some at least proven presence around a core of guys who they think have some really strong upside. And, I like that. We talked about the Nationals yesterday. we brought, and I brought up as an example, the Orioles from last season, the general vibe seemed to be, hey, we believe that our young guys are going to improve, so we're not really going to push for this World Series or this American League pennant. We're not really going to add that much. And ultimately, it didn't really work out. Here, at a lower level, there is not that. There is, hey, we think we have some guys, but let's add to that and let's see what we can get. And I think that's a really good sign. I think this is a team that could go over the win total that they're sitting at right now.
There are a couple of guys on the roster talking about kind of how expectations, at least within the building, have changed a little bit. Righty Davis Martin, one of them, said, quote, our expectations were almost zero the last 2 years. You're going out there, you be a big leaguer, go have fun, play your part, and learn how it is and how you want to do your job. This year you go in, all those guys who had that runway, now there's an expectation you figured things out and it's time to go. So they at least are talking internally like they're ready to take that next step.
Yeah. And I think, too, I mean, so there's a couple of ways that you can really look at this potentially. One of the ways that you could look at it is you can go over the win total, which I think is somewhat fair. You had in here the division finishing position.
Yeah.
Ask him to finish like fourth at 3-1, I don't think is the craziest thing in the world. I don't know what the Twins are going to be. We'll talk about them relatively soon. There seems to not be a very strong direction. And obviously last year they were 70-92. They got outscored by 95 runs over the course of the season. So I think there's a reality in which the White Sox take a legitimate step forward here and potentially surpass the Minnesota Twins. Now, obviously, if you take a really big step forward, you lose out on the exact position of fourth, but I would say that there's better odds for them to finish fourth than ahead of maybe Minnesota in that division.
Thematically, when you look at betting, I guess this could be fair for just about any sport, but when you're looking at Major League Baseball win totals like this, and do you target some of the lowest ones on the board to see if they could be an over candidate, or vice versa, looking at some of the contenders who have really, really high season win totals and see if an under could be in play?
Yeah, I like to talk about this all the time. NBA, Major League Baseball, we'll actually talk about NBA win totals because we're at the All-Star break. Right. We had a win total cash yesterday. There's two that have cashed already. But a lot of the times, not every time, but you will see the extremes cash first. You'll see some of the highest win totals go under. You'll see some of the lowest win totals go over. When you look at projections versus win totals, we've talked about this with a lot of bookmakers, but the projections are scrunched, or a lot more scrunched, where the win totals are a lot more spread out. So in other words, projections will have bad teams, according to win totals, doing better than what the win totals are. And I think that's something that, yeah, you can look on the extremes and expect maybe something a little bit better. And again, keep with the theme. So far here in the base or the NBA season, this is two win totals that were pretty low, that were in about the 30s or high 20s, and they both went over in the Suns and the Hornets. And you see those kind of sort of things.
If you think that the Chicago White Sox can have a win streak of 6 games or more, plus 155. That's kind of crazy to think. Their longest win streak market set at 5.5 wins, but I guess that checks out with a win total of 66. A good reminder here as well, our MLB betting guide is coming out in, I think we're 5 days out now from that. Our VSiN.com managing editor, Adam Burke, has been really hard at work at putting that together. He and Jensen Lewis providing unique perspectives on both ends. Adam, who's more of like an analytical numbers type of a guy, how he attacks baseball and baseball betting. Jensen, obviously, is a former player, going to get his approach to a handful of those teams. We're going to have him on the show tomorrow as well to talk through some of his angles for the MLB season ahead. On that note, we're going to take a quick timeout, step aside here on Follow the Money. When we come back, diving into a little bit of golf, we will update you on where things sit right now at Pebble Beach. Christopher Powers of Golf Digest is going to join us, talk through some different ways to do in-tournament betting, players who got off to a good start, can they hold on, all of that and more next when we can return.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Back here on Follow the Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel in for the guys right now. And I saw a tweet come across as I was scrolling a moment ago that said, imagine thinking Scottie Scheffler is the best golfer in the world when Ryo Hisatsune exists. He's shooting a 10 under, career low round to lead round one at Pebble Beach to help us talk over everything that's been going on out there in California. Christopher Powers joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, senior writer at Golf Digest, co-host of The Loop podcast. You can also follow him on X at CPowers14. 125 to 1 shot in the outright markets, live where things sit right now, plus 1275, so hell of a first round for Rio.
Absurd price pre-tournament, as you mentioned, for a guy who tied for second in California just a few weeks ago at Torrey Pines, the Farmers Insurance Open. And then he was in one of the final groups on the weekend last week in Arizona, TPC Scottsdale, kind of faded a little bit, still managed to tie for 10th. This is his third season on the PGA Tour, only 23 years old. All the makings of the next Japanese superstar in the vein of his childhood hero, Hideki Matsuyama.
So I'm curious, as you look at some of the data that comes in from the first round, from an in-tournament standpoint, Chris, what are you looking at? Because I brought up with Hisatsuna that his putter has been great. I mean, we're talking about over 5 strokes gained putting today while he's losing some strokes in different areas like approach. Is that a recipe for some regression? Are we looking in some way to play against him as this moves along, or can you sustain this over the course of a tournament?
Very difficult to sustain, obviously, 22 putts today. He just mentioned in his post-round interview how he played early in the morning. Greens were super fresh. Not going to be the case the rest of the week, especially if he's playing in one of the final groups on the weekend. Those POA greens at Pebble Beach, those only get worse as the day goes on with the foot traffic. They're already a little bit bumpy, the grass type. So he'll get to play Spyglass Hill tomorrow. But on the weekend, if he's in one of those final groups, he's playing in the afternoon and a bunch of guys are stomping around on the greens all day. Those are going to be much, much tougher to putt on. And we've got some weather coming this weekend at Pebble Beach as well.
So how does that impact your handicap, I guess, moving forward with the weather potentially coming in? Does that then change the group or batch of players that you want to buy in on moving forward?
I would certainly look at, you know, this is probably a good week, Saturday and Sunday morning, to just sort of monitor. If you see a guy with a kind of a crazy misprice next to his name, because he's quite far back, but if he's going out early in the morning at Pebble when the weather hasn't rolled in yet and the wind's a little bit down, maybe you can make up a ton of ground. There'll be some volatility if the rain and the wind that's predicted to come actually does come. It'll be much tougher for the guys in the afternoon, as I mentioned, not only with the weather, but on the green. So you might be able to catch a huge number on a guy going out early in the morning who can shoot a low number and make up a ton of ground.
All right, so we talked about putting. What are some of the other statistics that somebody jumping in tournament-wise would want to look at after the first round that would make you either play on or against a dude for a matchup or otherwise?
For sure, approach. Obviously, short wedges. Your wedge game is huge here at Pebble Beach. I know Russell Henley is already off to a great start. I would imagine that's because of his irons. So I would look at the approach play. Any guys who spiked today and maybe didn't get everything they wanted out of it because of maybe a bad putting round, I would look towards those numbers to see if you can, again, catch a decent number on a guy live.
Sam Burns threw his round a shot back at 9 under. Chris Goddard up at 7 under through 15 right now. He's already got 2 wins under his belt, was 30-1 pre-tournament. He's now the live favorite at 10-1. Is this something we should have expected right out the gate, considering how hot he's been to start the year?
Yeah, I mean, based off the way he's playing, yes, but Pebble Beach, you know, he kind of hits the ball very far, not great with his shorter clubs, so this isn't really the best course fit for him, but you can throw course fit out when you're playing the way this guy is playing right now. And I mean, he started off with 6 birdies to start his round. He's just scorching hot. He's hitting the ball great. Everything's going in with the putter, so I guess it was kind of to be expected, even though the course fit isn't great for Chris Goddard.
How do you do in tournament betting personally? Do you bet a lot while the tournament starts, or do you just sit back with your pre-flop stuff? How do you handle it?
Usually when my outright bets are off to a rough start, I out of necessity have to sort of look to get back in on the action. And I did last week on Michael Thorbjornsson, who obviously, if you saw how that tournament finished, that was a brutal ending. Found him 80-1 Saturday morning. I'll probably be doing the same this week, although I do have 2 decent horses in the fight right now. Akshay Bhatia is off to a good start. He's on 18 right now at Pebble Beach. And then Maverick McNealy, who obviously is always a hot name here because he grew up playing here, loves the golf course. His father had a house on the 16th hole. He's off to a good start at 5 under. So I like where I'm at right now, but it never hurts again to add one more name on maybe Saturday or Sunday morning.
What do you make of the start from Scottie Scheffler, second tournament in a row where round one has not gone his way?
Yeah, I mean, I would not bet against him being in one of the last 2 groups on Sunday. That's just how good he is. You know, he got off to a bad start for him last week. He shot 2 over He ends up one shot out of a playoff, and he really didn't do anything that crazy. He sort of just plodded along. I would expect the exact same thing this week. I would be stunned if he's not, you know, within two or three shots heading into Sunday's final round. I went back and looked. In his last 40 events, he has finished in the top three 22 times. I know you guys like your math out there in Vegas. That is better than 50% in his last 40 events where he's finished among the top three. It's basically impossible what he's doing, and I would expect more of the same the rest of this week.
JVT, plus 146 for a top 10 for Scheffler, plus 325 for a top five.
Yep. The guy that I was looking at to potentially come back in on, Rory McIlroy, if you look at his profile for today, it actually wasn't really that bad. It was a putter that let him down. What'd you see from him? Would he be worth adding here if you didn't get in? He's 16-1 now, plus 260, top five, plus 118, top 10.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about that is that Pebble Beach, this was the day to get Pebble Beach. This was the easiest it's going to play all week. Rory played at Spyglass Hill today, obviously. Played well, like you said. Won here a year ago. He's got plenty of firepower, but Pebble's only going to get tougher as the week goes on. I think the guys who got to play Pebble today shot a, you know, 5-under, 6-under, a decent score. They have a massive leg up on the guys who are, you know, 2-3, 4-under. And still have to play Pebble when the weather rolls in this weekend.
Christopher Powers of Golf Digest joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Looking even farther out on the calendar, I know JVT already has a Masters bet in pocket. How much do you look ahead to some of those major tournaments, the Masters? Do you start adding to the portfolio as the year goes on? What's your approach to some of those markets?
Yeah, I should. I wish I did. You know, Justin Rose is a perfect example, and I kind of just, you know, I don't act quickly enough like some much sharper people than me in our industry here. So, you know, I don't have any futures yet on the Masters. I'm such a Bryson DeChambeau guy at the Masters these last few years, like single bullet, because I really think he's started to figure out that golf course. Obviously, he's broken my heart over the last 2 years, although he has come close. So I'm kind of like tunnel vision on Bryson DeChambeau still. I think he's 12-1 right now. That could go down if he wins a live event soon. So maybe I should act on that now, but haven't been good enough about that yet.
Well, I mean, how much do these prices change? I mean, obviously it depends on, because they get, Stormy mentioned, I have a bet. It's on Goddard up because he's just been playing well and he's doing it again today. So maybe this will be longer than the 40-1 that I have. But how much do these markets really change from now into the Masters when you're talking about betting them so early out?
It's really based off if a guy wins or not. You know, you might still be able to get a good price on a guy who just has a couple top tens this year and they haven't really overcorrected yet. There's such a massive overcorrection when a guy does win that he almost becomes a little bit unattractive. That's still a pretty good number on Goddard. Like I mentioned before, he hits the driver so well, plays that nice fade, should set up okay for Augusta. He has never played there, so that would scare me a little, but I understand jumping in on him as early as you can. But yeah, it's usually the guys who win, like Justin Rose. I think he was 100-1 or higher at every major. He wins at Torrey Pines, and now he's, you know, down to 40-30-1, which is crazy for a 45-year-old who I know he's played really well in the majors, and he stays in good shape, and you know, his game travels anywhere. But it's very hard to win one of those, as he's shown over the last few years. So it's the overcorrection on guys who win. But if you can still find a guy who hasn't won yet, that's probably the move.
Chris, appreciate the breakdown. Thank you so much for this.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Christopher Powers, follow him on X at CPowers14. All the work over at Golf Digest, also the Loop podcast, wherever you get your podcast. 3.3 seconds left in the period for Team USA.
Just end it.
5-1. Let's get it.
Good job.
You
good
bet
job.
It.
I feel like I can relax now. Very good job. I feel like I've been a little wound up today. I apologize if I've lashed out at anybody, but good job.
Mostly been me, so it's okay. That's, you know, right. I'm used to it.
I'm pretty nice to our crew. They deserve it.
No, you are. You're much nicer to them.
Let's go, buddy. All right.
Cash
got it,
in.
Got
5-1. They cover the pre-flop 3.5. JVT's in-game 2.5.
I'm going to add Rory McIlroy to win this weekend.
Yeah?
Yeah, got a little extra cash. Let's
did you bet anything pre-tournament? Did you end up putting anything in on? Of course you didn't, because you have a problem. That was the worst New Year's resolution you ever could have made.
You know what the worst part is? It lasted one tournament, actually won a couple of bets, and then it was just like out.
Unreal. Okay, you hear the music. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, Do You Concur is on deck. Don't go anywhere.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Great moments in history have begun with a question.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
And what kind of hair product does Mitch Moss use? But Follow the Money wants to know.
Do you concur?
Concur with
what, sir?
Do you concur?
I know the answer to one of those questions.
I was going
to
say, what kind of hair product do you use? Now I'm curious.
This is a Tresemme hairspray.
Oh, Tresemme. Ooh, la la.
I do a light spritz, you know what I mean? Because you can't get all up in there. It's too crazy.
Isn't a big thing guys do is like the wax?
Pomade?
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of.
I've tried that before too. I don't know how to style my hair very well. I will be honest. My hair's come up a lot today, and I appreciate this. I have wonderful hair.
Yeah, someone tweeted at you the other day. You said,
got great hair. Good hair. And it's the only quality that I have. And
you said it.
I've tried many different ways to style it, but I will be honest. Styling my hair is so frustrating that I would actually shave it every day. But I have been told, shave it every day. I mean, not bald, but a buzz cut.
Okay.
But I've been told by Mitch Moss as well that you've got lettuce like that. You got to let it grow.
All right, so. And I would agree with that. Seconded, because it might not be there forever, bud. Yep. So hang on while you still can. Let's go into.
Sorry, get some grays though.
Do you concur? So obviously we have the NBA All-Star weekend break that's coming up, and the big thing this year, because every year you're trying to do something different to see if you can drum up more competitiveness or more excitement and eyeballs around it. Do you concur that the USA versus the world is not going to drum up any additional interest for the All-Star game? It's just not.
Yes. That's it. That's all I got. What do you want me to say? Nobody cares about the All-Star games.
I bring it up because they're trying to make it something.
They're going to try. Every sport tries. Story, I just watched out in San Francisco, they did the Pro Bowl games in a convention center, for crying out loud. Everybody was out there. Every sport is trying to do something, but who cares?
No, I know, but it's right on the heels of what, I mean, obviously the Olympics are playing right now, so it's a playoff of that. What we saw with the Four Nations last year with the NHL eliminating the All-Star break for that week and specifically doing that tournament, and we saw the intensity and the fun of it. It's not the same thing in the NBA. It's just not. So
I don't think it's the same for any of them.
Didn't you have a different suggestion?
Get rid of all of them?
No.
Except for baseball? I mean, so baseball, I know you're trying to get me to go. With baseball, at least it is a sport that
I like
is
the baseball also.
Easily, but it's the sport that is most easily replicated to play at its highest degree in a format like this. So in other words, it's not as high intensity, so that's probably an easier way to say it. So you can go out there and play an All-Star game with these guys in a meaningless game and have them go all out for the most part, because it's unlikely in comparison with some of these other sports that you're going to suffer some sort of injury. You know, if you're playing a Pro Bowl in full pads going 100%, then you're crazy because you're probably going to get injured. I think it was Nick Wright who suggested, if you really want to get people to watch, you put a team of white guys versus black guys and then you put them together and you're going to get it done. And I think a lot of people would probably watch that.
Jeez.
Heck yeah, dude. I was constructing starting fives earlier.
I know you were.
I got a problem.
Did you get anywhere with that, though, is the question.
I was trying to find a white small forward, and I was really struggling. Yeah, I was really struggling.
Gotta be a two-way guy. Yeah. Gotta have somebody who can play defense.
You heard me. I was really trying to break it down. Nick Wright had a good idea. I think that everybody would watch that.
Where's yours?
All right, let's go serious sports first. I am fascinated by this topic. Matt Brown brought this up to me the other day when I was on a numbers game. Sportsbooks need to hang 1.5 as the number for quarterbacks in the first round. Do you concur?
I do. Absolutely. So that we can play the under.
Okay.
How much juice are we going to have to lay for the under, however?
That's the problem, and this is why this is so fascinating. Do you just hang a 1?
I keep seeing all these mock drafts with Ty Simpson going to the Steelers and Ty Simpson being taken in the first round. So give me 1.5.
I mean, I'm just curious. Like, if you hang the 1, then, I mean, you have to juice. I don't know, what do you do? Because the 1 is, we know Fernando Mendoza is going to go in the first round. And so essentially, if you're a better, do you just come in? And this was thrown out on Twitter as well. I'm sorry, sir, if I don't remember your name, but you brought this up, which is, do you just bet over 1 as essentially a free roll? Because we know Mendoza's not going to fall out of the first round. And if you get over, then you're good. But at 1.5, it's a completely different question.
Correct.
And I am fascinated to see what they do. Matt Brown had a suggestion of maybe they just wait to see if there's any buzz and then hang the number later. But this is, to me, out of all of them, outside of me betting them all the time, this is the prop I cannot wait to see what they give us.
I'm in total agreement with you. I hope we get a 1.5. This one is a submission from our producer, Justin, which I love. All future tickets should be paper tickets so you don't have to stare at the bet on your phone for 6 months. I concur to an extent. I was texting you guys about this. I think the proper way to handle this is we just need a futures tab in the app so that it's separate from the day-to-day bets that we have going through.
I would agree. I would mean, you know, you don't want to stare at them for the most part. Like you said, whenever I get the, when we go play the blackjack tournaments, and I take my ticket and I put it in a drawer and I close the drawer and just make sure everything's okay. I will say the paper tickets give me a little bit of agita, I guess, is that the right term? Because I feel like I'm going to lose it. I feel like it's going to get destroyed.
It does stress me out a little bit. Yeah. I have a place at my house that I specifically put them, but like, where? I don't, it's not, you want a bunch of losers? I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, for the future.
There is.
Oh, take a picture of it.
Take a picture of it on your phone. Yeah, there is some sort of satisfaction when you lose a bet, and it's awful though being able to tear up the ticket and
not really
away from it. All right, do you concur?
It's great tearing money up.
James Harden will
speaks
finally
more about
put
you
together a consistent, high quality playoff this year with the Cavaliers, because we talk about this all the time in other sports, right? Like, oh, like this happens until it doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. You could even make the argument, as we were talking earlier with the Seattle Seahawks, about Sam Darnold.
Speaking my language.
Yes, it was terrible, but eventually, in a lot of these cases, the streak ends. Something like, why not? Why wouldn't it work with the Cavs? We were seeing it work already. If everybody stays healthy, I think that he could really be a difference maker for the Cavs postseason run.
All right, I'm going to take you back to May
3rd. I know historically it's been bad.
May 3rd, 2025. Do you know the importance of this date?
Hit me.
This date, Jonathan Von Tobel, a young 34 years old last year, of course. Very excited because my Los Angeles Clippers were getting ready for a Game 7 against the Denver Nuggets. They just pulled off a great victory. They had beat them at home in L.A. 111-105 to force a Game 7. James Harden, with very raw intensity, comes out and goes 2 of 8 from the floor, ends up scoring just a measly 7 points. The Clippers get absolutely blasted, curb stomped, to use a term that you love.
Don't like it.
Absolute no-show from Harden. And that's not the only time he's done it. I am one that very much fights for that term that you used. Just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean it won't. But there is such a large sample size of this guy not going in, which is why we talked about it. Instead of betting, you know, Cavaliers to win the Eastern Conference or Cavaliers to win the NBA Finals, I mean, maybe just to bet them to sweat out the fact that they could make the Detroit sweat for the division. Yeah.
I don't know. Eastern Conference, baby. Let's go. Anything else for you?
Yes, of course. Got a couple here. Do you concur? Keontae George's campaign to win Most Improved is dead.
Because of the Jazz situation?
Well, no. I mean, yes. And the fact that, yes, he's been sitting games, not going to play again today. It was a really good run. It seems like just yesterday, it was like 4 or 5 games ago, that he scores over 40 points, looks absolutely tremendous. But he hasn't been playing, and I think the Jazz are going to shut him down. By the way, Jazz just one win away from going over their win total. I think that this we had a good run, but I think George is done.
I concur. Sadly, because I don't have a lot of NBA futures, but that was one I really believed in, liked the argument, everything. So, unfortunate there.
Sometimes you just, you know, you have to be happy.
BLV doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, you just, you know, you got to think back fondly. Don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened.
Yeah, it was a
nice
run.
And we had a moment. I will say this, and this is worth bringing up as well. He is still 8-1. But Denny Avdia still -120, Jalen Johnson at +240, and that's where it's kind of sitting right now. That seems to be how this is going to shake out, but who knows? Maybe he'll keep playing.
Okay. Do you concur? 18 holes of golf for just a casual player. It's too many. It's too many.
I mean, just like you?
I get so petered out after 15 or 16.
You're not drinking?
Even when I drink, I feel like I just get kind of worn out. Here's my suggestion, okay?
Got to get some
instead of
accelerants
a front
up
nine
in there too.
And a back nine, you have 6, 6, and 6. And that way, after 12, if you're a little tired, you can just be done there.
I think a lot of people would disagree with you.
I don't know. My favorite thing to do here in Vegas is the Cloud 9.
Yeah, it's great.
At Angel Park, just 12 holes on a par 3. Beautiful.
Matt Humans loves to tell the story. I signed up to do a golf invitational out here with him. They needed another person. And the first time Humans and I went to go play golf together, I have never played before in my life at this point. And I am telling you, Stormy, my first golf shot, chef's kiss.
Beautiful.
Just laced that sucker right there. Fell within like 6 feet of the pin. Matt thought, oh, dude, like he's got something. 2 holes later, I made Matt scream because I shanked it so hard the ball hit off a light pole and it bounced back and almost hit him in the head. He refutes the fact that he screamed. He did. He
That's
absolutely
amazing.
Did. So,
on that first hole, did you get a birdie?
Of course.
Okay, well, I had to check.
Of course.
I wasn't sure if the short game was any good.
My game has not reflected that at all.
That said, I'm just saying, 18 hole, it's a long day. It's tiring, especially out here in Vegas. It can get really hot. I know all y'all are just trying to get away from your wives all day long, so it works out for you from that standpoint.
Again, a weird comment about your... Is everything going okay?
No, you just get tired.
Your husband was texting me back pretty quick yesterday. I was like, shouldn't you be like hanging out?
Why are you texting my husband? Is there something I don't know about? Okay, we got to step aside here on Follow the Money. Kicking off hour three of the program coming up after this. Keep it locked right here. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM, channel 158.